WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. If you want to impress people with a perceptive quote, the place to turn is Bartlett's Familiar Quotations. The first volume was published in 1855 by John Bartlett. The 16th edition has just been published, and my guest is the editor, Justin Kaplan. Kaplan is the author of biographies of Walt Whitman, Mark Twain, and Lincoln Steffens. It's Veterans Day, so I looked up war in the index and found over a page of entries. I turned to the entry, War is Hell, and learned that that phrase comes from a military academy commencement address by General William Sherman in 1879. He said, "War is at best barbarism. Its glory is all moonshine. It is only those who have neither fired a shot nor heard the shrieks and groans of the wounded who cry aloud for blood, more vengeance, more desolation. War is hell." Justin Kaplan has also included more contemporary quotes about war in the new Bartletts. This one is from the Francis Ford Coppola film Apocalypse Now. The line was spoken by Robert Duvall.
"I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory." There's another quotation from a brilliant book by Michael Herr called Dispatches. And I'll read you two quotations from it. "I think Vietnam was what we had instead of happy childhoods," is one of them. And then the other quotation deals with, I think, the organic connection between the Vietnam War and rock lyrics. And that's one reason you'll find so many rock lyrics in the current edition. This again is from Herr's Dispatches. "Out on the street, I couldn't tell the Vietnam veterans from the rock and roll veterans. The 60s had made so many casualties. Its war and its music had run power off the same circuit for so long, they didn't even have to fuse."
So you told us why you chose the Michael Herr quote. What about the quote about napalm in the morning from Apocalypse Now?
Well, I thought that was Apocalypse Now certainly is a classic movie about the Vietnam era. But to go beyond that, I gave a fair amount of thought to where people get their quotations from these days. They don't, this is an obvious statement, that they don't quote from Shakespeare and the Bible or Virgil as much as they used to. In fact, they don't quote from them at all. If you listen to the conversation of rather well-educated people, for example, meeting at a party, you'll find that the common ground that they immediately find is the movies. And the movies supply the so-called lingua franca of our era. The Italians, I'm told, think of the movies as the 10th muse and would not be surprised if the other 9 muses had to roll over to make room for it. I'm thinking, of course, of the Chuck Berry lyric, "Roll over Beethoven and tell Tchaikovsky the news." I hope it's not true, but the movies are important, and the movies are where most quotations these days come from.
Well, public radio listeners will be pleased to know that you quote Garrison Keillor.
Well, I thought he belonged here. I thought he was absolutely essential.
You want to read the quote?
Well, I put in 2 quotations from Garrison Keillor. I think both of them are firmly rooted in the American memory by now. "That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average." And, of course, the second is a description of the town. "It's the little town that time forgot, that the decades cannot improve."
I wonder if Garrison knows he's in here. Do you let people know that they're going to be in Bartlett's?
No, I let them find out the hard way simply by looking at the book. They do not get a letter of notification, no.
Well, Zippy the Pinhead fans will be pleased to know that you've quoted him as saying, "Are we having fun yet?" And Zippy the Pinhead is the cartoon creation of Bill Griffith.
I'm glad we put that in, and I know that Bill Griffith had a fair amount of trouble establishing his proprietary right in that line, because it had been attributed to, I think, various television shows or a movie. But I'm glad to say that justice has been done, finally.
James Brown has made it into Bartlett's. Say
yes.
It loud, I'm black and I'm proud.
Right.
Your choice?
I believe so, yes.
Now, there's a quote that our listeners will probably remember. "Love means not ever having to say you're sorry." That's Eric Siegel from the movie Love Story. How did you feel about having that in Bartlett's quotation? It's really I think, one of the kind of cornier quotes, or certainly become that.
Well, it's certainly one of the stupidest single lines of dialogue ever written. But it is so stupid and so meaningless that, again, it became burned in the American memory. And I believe that there's a later movie in which Ryan O'Neill, who played in the original Love Story, another movie in which Ryan O'Neill quotes the line and says something like, "I think that's the stupidest thing I ever heard." Well, regardless of its stupidity, that's the one thing from Love Story that you can count on people remembering.
But you didn't feel the need to put in parentheses, "I, the editor of this edition, do not really believe this is a profound thought."
I do not indicate when I put a clothespin over my nose.
Now, if you were putting this together today, you know, if you were still editing the book, would James Stockdale's now famous quote of "Who am I? Why am I here?" be included?
I'm not sure. Again, it's a very close call between what you think will have lasting power. And I don't mean timelessness. I mean something that will last in the memory for 10 years. I somehow have the feeling that Stockdale's rather pathetic and appealing line, I have the feeling that won't last. That he was very much of a passing phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas certain obvious Bushisms and Reaganisms are burned in our memory.
Like what?
Well, 1,000 points of light. That phrase has been in existence since, it's written by
Peggy
Noonan, a brilliant speechwriter. That's been in existence since 1988, when Bush first uttered these words at the Republican National Convention in New Orleans. Well, by now, 1,000 points of light must have figured in at least 1,000 jokes, cartoons, quips, and so on. There was a Herb Bloch cartoon right after the convention which showed you two people sitting in a saloon, and one of them says, "Well, I guess he meant 1,000 pints of light beer." And then shortly after that, I remember that there was a full-page ad in the New York Times for a dress that Macy's was promoting. It was a sequin dress, and it said 1,000 points of light. And I think the comment on that enduring but meaningless phrase that I like most, and I forget who said it, the comment was that Bush unfortunately forgot to tell you that batteries were not included. I wish I could claim authorship of that quip. It's not mine.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Justin Kaplan, and he's edited a new edition of Bartlett's Quotations. We'll talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Justin Kaplan is my guest, and we're talking about Bartlett's Quotations. He edited the new edition, which has just been published. I sometimes think of Bartlett's Quotations as being a book for cheaters, for people who have a luncheon address or a speech they have to give, and they want to say something profound, so they'll quickly find a quote in Bartlett's. And then they'll say it as if these words have guided them all their life, you know, and that the person who they're quoting has been a lifelong influence upon them. And I wonder how you feel about that.
Well, that's one use for it. People do use quotations to dress up their own thoughts to impress people. And Bartlett's, as a reference book, is an invaluable tool in doing that. But I think it goes way beyond that. I like to think of it not simply as a reference book, but as a reading book. It's a rather unique anthology. It is, after all, not arranged like a dictionary alphabetically, which is the way most quotation books are arranged. It's arranged chronologically, which seems at first glance rather odd and maybe a little unwieldy as far as using the book is concerned. But what that gives the book is a very special character of a reading book. You can start at the beginning with ancient Egypt, if you choose, and you work your way up to the present time. And you may have the feeling that you're hearing people of a certain era. You're getting the flavor of a certain era as time moves along.
Well, let me just underscore what you're saying by quoting Winston Churchill. And there's actually a quote about Bartlett's Quotations within Bartlett's Quotations. It's by Winston Churchill.
That's a little self-promotion.
Yes. But you quote Churchill as saying, "It is a good thing for an uneducated man to read books of quotations. Bartlett's Familiar Quotations is an admirable work, and I studied it intently. The quotations, when engraved upon the memory, give you good thoughts. They also make you anxious to read the authors and look for more."
Well, I'm not sure that shouldn't have been on the jacket of this book instead of in the book itself.
A little blurb.
It's an internal blurb.
Have you had to speak at luncheons or anything in the past few years while you've been editing this book? And did you find yourself using quotes that you had been choosing to include in here? You know, did you become quite the quoter?
Well, I've always been a quoter. I think I'm trying to cure myself of that habit.
How have you used quotes?
I think very largely to illustrate the meaning of words or the development of ideas. You know, I don't use them to lend authority to what I say. That's one use of quotations. It doesn't happen to be mine. I could go on. I've given, obviously, a certain amount of thought to why and how people use quotations. And I think one way they use them is as passwords, as the equivalent of secret handshakes. If you make a reference that either a direct quotation or an allusion that the other person understands, you've established a certain bond. You can say, I understand you. We speak the same language.
You're a biographer in addition
to editing
Bartlett's. And two of the people who you've written biographies of are two of the most quoted Americans, Mark Twain and Walt Whitman. Did you often see them quoted out of context or, you know, quoted, you know, with the wrong interpretation?
Well, Mark Twain is always being either overquoted or misquoted. And I did a certain amount of correction in the Mark Twain section here. I redid all of the Mark Twain quotations because I thought the Mark Twain that we value these days is much more Mark Twain, the satirist, and Mark Twain, the vernacular artist. And so I tended to reduce the amount of, you know, pure sentiment which some people associate with Mark Twain. In the way of restoring balance, I've restored to Mark Twain the famous quip, everyone grumbles about the weather, but no one does anything about it. My predecessors had attributed that to a friend of Mark Twain's named Charles Dudley Warner. I'm pretty sure that it belongs to Mark Twain. On the other hand, there's another quip that people have associated with Mark Twain, and that is, Wagner's music is better than it sounds. But if you look at Mark Twain's autobiography, he directly attributes that to a fellow humorist named Bill Nye, and that's where the credit goes this time.
So it's time for us to wrap up. Should I ask you something silly, like can you leave us with an inspiring quote? You must get asked this all the time. It must be really frustrating.
I suppose if I had to come up with an inspiring quote, it would be of a distinctly vernacular sort. It's a quotation attributed to Yogi Berra, and I have to underline the word attributed. I like it very much. It runs, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. make of that what you want.
That's great. Justin Kaplan, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Justin Kaplan edited the new edition of Bartlett's Familiar Quotations. This is Fresh Air.